Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you all to the first ever Back to School Hidden Sparks Without Walls presentation. My name is Sarah Diamond, and I'm the Director of School Services at Hidden Sparks. We're excited to have Brandy Goldfarb with us tonight to help us plan for managing any separation anxiety that might surface with our students and children in the upcoming weeks. I can tell you personally that as a parent whose eldest son literally latched onto her legs the first day of, he'd been in school many years, first day of like pre-1A slash kindergarten, literally locked onto my leg and the teacher had to like pull him off me. I wish I had had this webinar about 15 years ago. The full recording of tonight's presentation will be available later in the week on our webinar archive and you'll receive an email when it's posted. Before we get started, I'd like to review some conference call etiquette. During the webinar, all participants will be muted to reduce background noise. If you have a question, please enter it in the chat box at the bottom right-hand side of your screen, and we'll try to address questions at the end of the presentation and during if there's time. Please note that if you want your question to be seen by all participants, please select all participants from the drop-down menu, and if you'd rather it just be seen by the panelists, please select that option. Randy may ask you to use the hand, check, and X icons on the right-hand side of your screen in response to questions at different points throughout the presentation. Please be aware that those of you on a mobile device may not be able to have access to those icons. Without further delay, I'm thrilled to introduce Randy. Randy Goldfarb is the founder and president of Zach and Nat and is a licensed clinical social worker, published children's book author, dedicated preschool teacher, mother of two spirited boys, and the creator of the Keep Calm Kit. She's impassioned to problem solve and with a focus on proactive-based solutions is what drives her mission in life, empowering educators, caregivers, and children to connect and stay connected by creatively building social-emotional skills. Okay, Randy, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you. So I'm really excited that all of you are joining tonight. And I'm excited to share the webinar with a couple of purposes and a couple of perspectives. Coming from being a mother where I first confronted separation anxiety, I've been a social worker for 20 years, and I am most recently a preschool teacher and also a separation supporter for a whole host of kids. And the exciting thing about this webinar is that it's being offered to educators and parents together, which I think is really an amazing opportunity because, as you'll see when we talk throughout the webinar, having collaboration is one of the most important pieces in having successful separation. And so I've really gone through, personally and professionally, a lot of separation, and I've been everything from overwhelmed to empowered. And I wrote a book because of it, Yippee Yahoo, I'm Going to School, which we're going to talk about a little bit. And I'm really excited because I feel that I now have an enormous opportunity to really share what I've learned and what I continue to learn and really help so many people in their journey with separation across the ages. So I'm very excited. So as you see, there is a question up on your screen that I'd like you to answer. What words or feelings do you think of when you hear the word separation? Not necessarily separation anxiety, but separation. So if in the chat box, you can write down some of the words that come to mind when you think about that. Crying, alone, yes, mommy. Feeling lost, being afraid, yes, apart, absolutely. Anything else? Independent, so that's a really good one. Keep that in mind because that's going to be important. Scared, yes. Separating, no matter what it's for, can often bring up feelings of being afraid and scared. Growing up, yes, that is definitely an important part of separation, which we are going to talk about. It doesn't necessarily feel like that at separation anxiety time with little kids, but absolutely anxious. So that's a really important one, anxiety. We're going to talk about that. Obviously, the term is separation anxiety, so we're going to definitely talk about that. Finding myself, that's learning new things without mommy, absolutely. That's a really important piece, too. And I see that a lot of you are already sort of in the zone of what we're going to be talking about, which is really excellent. Okay, so if we're going to now move on to the next slide, and you're going to see that I have some words that have come up over time, and disappointed, proud, relieved, thrilled, frustrated, overwhelmed, anxious, worried. Some of these are ones that we brought up. Emotional, confused, guilty, frazzled, proud, sad. I've had some phrases that have come up that we're going to talk about also. My child needs me. How can I leave my child? My child doesn't want me to leave. I'm going to miss my child. So whether you're a teacher or a parent, these kinds of feelings, experiences are going to come up at some point or another. And we have to keep in mind also that little children, who their frontal lobes are still developing and they haven't figured out the full scope of emotional regulation and problem solving and reasoning and planning, they often feel a lot of these feelings, but they don't actually know how to express them, and it comes out in separation anxiety. And we're going to talk a lot about that tonight. Next slide. So let's just look at the overview of the session just to give you a scope of what we're going to be talking about. I really find that when we look at our separation stories, whether we're coming from the perspective of a parent or an educator and life in general, it's really important to look at them, and this looking deeper at them allows for greater self-awareness and then greater opportunity to learn how to manage it well. We're also going to explore separation anxiety, and I think, you know, a lot of times I get a lot of questions from people, what are you talking about with separation? What is there to, like, what's there to talk about? How could you do a whole webinar on separation anxiety? So we're going to talk about, most of us have some idea of what separation anxiety is. We're going to talk about what it is, what it isn't. We all know it's a universal struggle, but we're going to take a little bit of a deeper look at it. And we're going to see that separation anxiety is more than meets the eye. It's not just about kids having a hard time when there's school drop-off. And most importantly, we're also going to talk about how we develop partnerships so that we can have a supportive experience when separation happens. And that's really about creating a team approach. Next slide. The goal of tonight's webinar is really to look at separation anxiety and see it in a very different way so that both parents and educators are going to walk away feeling empowered. And they're going to walk away determined to create an atmosphere for supportive separation that's for back to school and past that. So we're going to go through what some of the myths and facts are of separation. Those are really, really critical. We are also going to talk about how, as an educator and a caregiver, how can you prepare? What can you do that's going to make your classroom run more smoothly in the beginning and also improve and find ways that you, in your relationship with your child, that you can actually use past school? And we're also going to talk about the social-emotional skills that come as a result, and that's an amazing added benefit. Next slide. So these are some of my favorite. I don't know if any of you know the Screen Beans. So they are characters that I feel definitely communicate a lot without actually seeing their facial expressions. And as a social worker, that always makes me smile a little bit, because I say, you know what? Our body language and how we are actually communicates a lot, not necessarily what our face is showing. So the one that's holding the baby on the top in the middle, so that one, to me, you know, and you can think about which one relates most to you as you're looking at them, but this is, you know, my baby, it's my special child, I'm going to be bringing them to school, this is my precious child, it's hard to let them go. The one all the way on the top on the right, that parent is maybe saying, I'm out of here as quickly as I can go, and I don't even want to look back, and I don't even know if they saw me, I'm done, I dropped off and I didn't hear any screaming, so we're good. Right underneath is the confused parent who says, I don't know, should I stay? Should I go? Do I offer to stay longer? How long do I stay? What do I do while I stay? We're going to go back up to the left. That's the parent who's saying, yay, I dropped off my child and now I can run and do 101 things and there was no screaming, so we're good forever. Underneath is the parent who's saying, oh dear, my child won't let go of me. What on earth am I to do? How can I peel them off me? I can't do this. How can I leave my child? And then the one on the bottom, that's actually one of my favorites. That's the parent who stays and finds any little spot in the door. If there's, you know, glass on the door or a window to the classroom to see what is going on in the classroom, just how long is my child going to scream for me. And we're going to talk about how all of these have a place in separation anxiety and what can we do to manage them well when we feel one or many of them at the same time. Next slide. So let's look at separation anxiety. What really is it, right? So we know that separation anxiety is, we're going to talk right now about the general term, not as a clinical diagnosis, because it is used in that way, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But separation anxiety is what we refer to common, where it is school related to drop off. You drop off your child at school or daycare, and there's a whole entire tantrum and big scene that happens, right? So what happens? Your child, and we actually can see separation anxiety starting in babies as early as 6 to 7 months, where they start to notice that someone's leaving and they might seem distressed about that. I actually read something recently that said that it peaks, separation anxiety can peak between 10 and 18 months, which sounds about right, and that it can start to ease up around 2 years old. And I had to do a double take because I said ease up at 2 year old. I don't know, most of us who know 2 year olds, those are usually the children who are the loudest about separation. So I don't believe that it actually decreases. But as children get older, you will see it dissipate. And if you use a lot of the strategies that we're going to talk about tonight, you will see that it will happen in a much smoother fashion. What happens? The child resists when you're leaving, clinging, screaming, crying, throwing a tantrum, all kinds of things that I'm sure you can imagine or you've experienced. And when does it happen? Really, it can happen, you know, if your babysitter's coming, if you just move out of the room to go do laundry or whatever it may be. It's not just school related. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more also. It shows up in the community. And why? That's really the most important question of this piece. It is because children need to feel safe and secure, but they also need to feel independent as they get older. And what happens when children are very young? They don't understand object permanence, right? They don't understand that if something is not in front of them, that it's going to still be there another time and it's going to come back. And that takes a long time for them to learn and understand. And if we keep that in mind, we're going to remember that it's a real and sincere struggle that is not meant to be just brushed aside, because it is part of a normative experience that children, no matter what country, no matter what religion, whatever it may be, separation anxiety happens and has been happening forever. So it is definitely something that is very significant. Separation anxiety, when we're looking at it from a clinical perspective, and where there would need greater attention, that's something that lasts for more than 4 weeks. And it has a number of other criteria, which I'm just going to briefly mention because it is important to know if you do need to reach out for further support with mental health support or reach out to your pediatrician, because it can be more serious than normative. You might still see regular separation anxiety lasting for a long amount of time, but it's not going to be excessive and severe. It's excessive distress, excessive worry, persistent reluctance to go anywhere or do anything, nightmares, complaining of stomach aches or vomiting, or any real serious issues where there is just a disruption of functioning. That is when it is not what we're talking about tonight. A lot of times people say to me that they think it happens more often with girls than boys. So I'm the mother of boys. I will tell you it's not so. And you'll look at the literature. It happens equally with boys and girls. And the other thing that I find a lot of times, there's the misunderstanding that it's the child's issue with separation. That is not the case. It is also the adult parent issue. It's generally the mother more often. I have seen it with fathers, but it is. What we do and how we behave completely contributes to what happens with separation anxiety. And we're going to see that separation anxiety is not just a fleeting phase, which is often what people refer to, and they just sort of brush it over. Okay, let's just distract the children as long as we can so they stop crying. What I am going to propose tonight and share with you is that We have an enormous opportunity to help a child get through something that they must get through, just like going to the doctor, crossing the street, holding an adult's hand when they're younger. They don't have a choice. We need to give them tools that are going to help them manage it, and it's going to help them throughout the rest of their lives. Next slide. So we all know these faces, maybe not personally, but they all look familiar. We can all speculate if this were at drop-off time, what could be going on? What could be the scene with the parent and the teacher? It is so hard, and I will tell you, as a parent who dropped off a child at the start of school and the child screamed and carried on and I was not prepared for that, and the teacher looked at me waiting for me to do something, and I looked at her waiting for her to do something, and I didn't know what to do while my poor child was screaming and carrying on. And finally, I just peeled him off me and kind of just threw him at her, and I said goodbye. And I walked out saying, this doesn't feel right. This is not good. We've got to figure something better out. And that's actually when I started trying to find books. That was one of my ways of trying to cope with this, and I couldn't find any book that matched what I was trying to convey. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, about what type of book is valuable when we're talking about separation anxiety. But when we think of it that this is an important part of development, we are going to take a new perspective when we see these crying faces in the next couple of days. Next slide. So if you can, in the chat box, what are some of the separation situations you've experienced, whether you're a teacher or whether you're a parent? Very briefly, a positive or a negative, and if you can be descriptive. So in the chat box, if you can type in what are some of the situations you've experienced. So I'm going to share one with you while we wait for the audience to participate. So I have a reverse separation, actually. I had a situation where a parent came to pick up a child and the child refused to go with the parent. And there was a lot of drama. This actually happened for an entire summer while I was not the teacher in the class. And once the child was in my class, we worked out a scenario, which I'll talk a little bit more later about how to do that, but it really was just addressing what his concerns were, and then he was able to leave the classroom successfully. Parent leaves once they come for a birthday party or school program, so that's a great one that just came up, because that's a huge piece of separation anxiety, because it's not just going to school, holding on to your skirt and won't stay by a tutor even though she likes the person, right? Excellent. Crying. Let's see, parent lingering, which makes the situation worse. I'm guessing that was a teacher who wrote that, because yes, that is something we're going to talk about. It is very difficult as a teacher when you have parents that are that are not leaving, and it's very difficult. The last days of camp, as kids are starting to feel attached to where they were, absolutely. Child is afraid of new situations. Worried at school, she turns around, shuts down, runs away. That's a really important piece to pay attention to. Absolutely. We're going to look at one more. And child would cry hysterically when I would leave for work in the morning and he was left with the babysitter, right? That's always so difficult. The nanny. Child suddenly refuses to go to school the first day, crying, locking herself in the bathroom. Yeah, sometimes we don't expect it. And they've been going to school for so many years, you think everything's going to be fine. Excellent point, because we can't always know that for sure. So now we're going to look a little bit more at some of those situations in a little bit more detail. The next slide, please. So we see, excellent, because the examples that you all gave are very clear that we all realize that separation situations occur in the home setting, they occur in the school setting, they occur in camp, and they occur in the community, which is clear that this is a huge opportunity to work at to make better. Home, babysitter, putting a child down for a nap or bedtime, walking out of the room for whatever it is, camp. So it's very interesting, just as a side comment, camp, you know, a lot of the camps actually don't have staggered arrival and don't have the children come and be in the classroom and meet the teacher for a little bit at a time. You just go straight into camp. And that, you know, most kids are expected to be fine with that. So it's just an interesting piece to think about. I still think we need to pay attention to it. Communities. So I am one of the parents who would rather leave my child at a birthday party, but I don't see any of the other parents leaving their children. And I'm talking about 4 and 5 year olds who I think can be left at a birthday party when there's adequate supervision. And then I have to stay because I don't want to leave my child to be the only one who doesn't have a parent there. But it definitely happens. You go on, bring a child on a play date and they're clinging to you and they don't want to go play with the other child that they happen to like to play with. One of the other pieces that we don't always think about is sometimes there can be extenuating circumstances, life situations. A parent goes on a business trip. I just had that in my own home. My husband went away on a business trip, and my children, who are older, were crying and talking about how much they missed him. And I was sitting there like, oh, really? I wasn't expecting that, because it really still can happen in other situations. If, God forbid, a family member is hospitalized, that can also create separation situations that are intense. And if a new sibling is born, that also can change. And if we do see the child's behavior changing from what normally has been, we do want to look at and see what has changed in the environment potentially that could be creating a situation. I was recently talking to a mother who told me that her babysitter had to go out on medical leave suddenly, and the child's behavior has been increasingly difficult at home, and she hadn't put the two pieces together to realize that this was a babysitter who was a part of this child's life, and it was very difficult. Lack of sleep, by the way, can also be a piece of separation anxiety. Children can't manage as well when they're very tired. Next slide. So now we're going to start talking about what can we do. Now we understand what are all the ways that separation anxiety happens. Now we're going to look at some of the things that we can do. So what I like to talk about is what I call supportive separation and using the 3P method. It's prepare, practice, and have patience. The way we're going to look at those is we're going to look at it in 3 sections. Prior to the first day, we're going to use all of these strategies. On the day of implementation day, we're going to use these same 3 strategies. And then after that, we're going to utilize the same 3 strategies. Next slide. So what we have here, I wanted to give a flavor for what the process is for whether you're an educator or parents. And it's important for educators and parents to hear the same information so that we can really foster strong collaboration before the first day of school. Pre-communication, that is critical. I am a firm believer in parents reaching out to teachers prior to their child going into the school building with them to talk with them about what has happened in the past with separation. What are your expectations? How do you think it will go? I've heard so many parents say to me, all my children were fine. I don't expect any problems. I had parents from my class tell me after I gave them a whole thing on separation, one mom spoke up and said, these were 2-year-olds. Our children have all gone through a separation program, a mommy and me thing, and they really all did so great. We're not anticipating any problems at all. And let me tell you, the next day, 8 of my 12 students were screaming and carrying on. And the mom came over to me and said, okay, sorry about that. And I said, that's okay. It's nothing to be sorry about. It's just a great opportunity to remember that not all situations are alike. So whether the teachers are going to reach out to parents in advance or parents reach out to teachers, that's really important. I had a mom who said to me, I'm okay with calling the teacher, I guess, before I meet them with my child at school, but I don't want them to think that I'm a helicopter parent. Here I am saying, hi, just want to let you know this is how we're going to do separation. So I said to her, you want to think about how you're going to communicate what you want. And another mom piped in and said, you know, let's think about this for a minute. If your child had an allergy, would you worry that you're being a helicopter parent and you wouldn't want to say anything to the teacher in advance? And the mom took a moment and said, whoa, I never thought of it this way. And the other mom said, why should the emotional well-being and how we want to manage separation be something we should be afraid to talk about? If we talk about it, then it seems like we're going to actually have a better situation happening. And isn't that really so important? Because that's one of the reasons why our children are going to school. And that was a really profound learning moment to realize that it's not that we're being excessive and we're not being, you know, overdoing it as parents. This is an important thing to talk about. Teachers can talk with parents about what the routines are, how things work. How do they like to see separation? How long do they expect a parent to stay in the classroom? What should happen when they leave? When the parent leaves, how will that go if the child is screaming or crying? What will they do? That's a parent question as well. The teachers should really talk between themselves about, let's divide up the class, and when the children come in, you're going to zero in on these few kids, I'll zero in on these few kids, however many teachers you have, so you are ready if a child is having a difficult moment and you're not distracted and doing something else. That's where the internal planning comes. And once you craft a plan amongst yourselves, then that's important that you share that with the parents. Now, as a parent, there's a number of things that you're going to be able to do beforehand. So obviously, as I said, you're going to speak to the educators in advance. You're not a helicopter parent. You're going to tell them what has happened in the past, what you expect, and what kind of routine have you created that's going to help your child. So one of the things that I remind parents is always make sure you tell your child what happens in school. It seems obvious, but sometimes we don't even think about doing that. What it sort of happens, what are they going to do that might be similar to what they do at home? What might be different? You can role play. That's one of my favorite things that I started to learn to do with stuffed animals, toys, games. I did all of these goodbye things, pretending we're going to school, and acted it out with my child. And don't think that if you have a two-year-old or even a child that's younger, that it's wasted because they don't understand. I teach two-year-olds, and I will tell you that two-year-olds can learn profound things, no matter whether, even if they can't speak. And if they're not verbal yet, you can teach so much by just what you do in your behavior. Games, you can play books. So as I mentioned, so I had written a book because I didn't find the books that were out there were helpful. So I'm going to share with you two of the very popular books. And I share with you because I want you to now look at books in a much more critical way so that you can teach what you're intending to teach, because the lessons that are often taught in many of the books are not what we're intending to teach our children. One of the most famous books that people look to for separation anxiety, when I did my Google search, the first book that came up was The Kissing Hand. I'm sure teachers are familiar with it, parents as well. And that's one of the quintessential books that we talk about. If you will read the book very carefully, you will see that the first sentence, the book starts out talking about how much the raccoon doesn't want to go to school and he wants to stay home with mommy. I state that a book should not start out that way. I understand that that's what children may feel, but we're not looking for them to focus on that. So the three quarters of the book focuses on how much the child doesn't want to go to school. Then the mom says, I'm going to tell you I have a secret, and I'm going to give you a kiss in your hand. So I encourage educators never to use the word secret in any way, shape, or form in this day and age. That is a word we should never use. It should be a surprise, and it's important to note that when you're reading it to students. You know, some students might think if they have a kiss in their hand, it's going to wash off. So that can be a little bit confusing. At the end of the book, the raccoon seems to want to go back to school, but we don't really get a sense of how he managed to be in school when he only wanted to be with his mom. The next book, Llama Llama Mrs. Mama, that's a series that I could have a whole discussion about, but the book specifically is really, read it carefully, not what we are looking to teach our children and reinforce if they haven't even thought about it yet. The llama doesn't want to go. He's in school and he doesn't want to participate. He hates the book that someone suggests. He feels all alone. It's a strange place. You look at the language, the whole beginning of the book spends all this time on all the things the child is not doing because he's not with his mommy. I recognize that it's very hard, and as coming from the various perspectives that I have, and especially as a teacher, it's not valuable for our children to experience that as a way to teach them. Because what happens is the last bit of the book for 2 seconds. Also, he decides he wants to have a good time, the llama, and then the mommy comes and all is well, and he wants to go back to school tomorrow. But there was no teaching about how do we manage through it. And that is what I want you to walk away with today, that is what we're looking for. How do we teach? And my book, Yippee Yahoo, I'm Going to School, which is available on Amazon, does exactly what I found these other books don't do. It starts off positive. It shows that there's a difficulty as different situations come up. It talks about the language that we can use and a very simple breathing exercise to start off managing, and then things get better. And that, to me, is a much more healthy approach when we're looking at separation. Creating a goodbye routine, I have a whole thing set up with my kids. I had one student, her and her mom made a dance, a goodbye dance. They came in every morning, and even though the child was crying hysterically, the mom was doing this dance, and the child was crying, and they did the dance, and the child did much better once she got into the classroom because they had something to look forward to. High fives, kisses, work out something with your child that's going to be a fun way to say goodbye. You want to build emotional literacy. You want to use feeling words. You want to use emotion words. I'm sad that you are going to school. I'm going to miss you. That's okay to say. We don't have to say, I'm going to sit there and cry when I drop you off and I'll stand outside for 4 hours waiting to see what happens. But it's saying, I'm going to miss you, but I'm going to be okay because I know that you are in a safe place, in a happy place where you're going to learn a lot. That's the message that my book conveys. That's important. Even to say to your child, I know it's so hard when we say goodbye. It's very sad. But if you cry all day long and then you don't get to feel happy about things, and that would make me sad too. So what can you do while you're sad and missing mommy at school? Oh, you know what you have in your classroom? I bet you have this, that, or the other. Just like we have at home, you could play with those things. You can color. You can draw me a picture. I had a child who the mom and child drew a picture together. The child folded it up and brought it and kept it in his pocket every single day. And if he didn't have a pocket, he stuck it in his sock. And we didn't have a sock. I don't know. We were creative. We found ways so this child could have this note with him wherever we went. And it was much more valuable than having a stuffed animal that was in the way when he couldn't participate. This was something that was a connection between him and his mom. And once you craft your plan, as I said, we want to share it with the educators. It's also very important to share it with other caregivers, nannies, babysitters, grandparents, whoever's going to pick up your child or drop off your child. Share with them what your plan is. Share with them what your approach is. And ask them to try their best to be consistent. Obviously, it's not going to be the same, but we want them to be consistent. Now, we're very excited because we are going to the next slide, and we are at separation. We are on the day of. So we're at the next slide. Okay. So, educators, you are going to follow through with what you planned with the teacher. If Mora Chani or Mora Susan is supposed to be focusing on that child, then actually one of the things that I didn't mention prior is that it's important to find out the names of the teachers and tell your child the name a zillion times as much as you can. So it's a name that they're familiar with and they become familiar. Maybe you can find out a detail about them that you can share. So you're going to say to your child, when I'm dropping you off, Maura Susan, Miss Susan, is going to help you when I say goodbye. Because one of the things we're trying to communicate to our children as educators and parents is we're having a switch of authority, if you will. Parents are saying to their children, your teacher is now the person who is going to help you when I'm not there. And that's healthy relationship building skills, to learn that there's another grown-up out there who can help you if you need help with someone, and I trust them because I know they're going to do what we said because we discussed it. The educator is saying, I want these children to look to me for help and not need to cry and carry on because they don't have their mommy. Well, that's really important. We want to use intentional language. That is good for parents and educators too. But for educators, it's all kind of related, the body language, the intentional language. Thinking about being a co-regulator, which is something I recently learned about, we often talk about self-regulation with children. And it's a great term because we want children to be able to manage and have self-control. But when we're talking about preschoolers, they are not at a point where they are fully self-sufficient to be in control of everything that goes on for themselves. They need a co-regulator. So the teacher is the person at drop-off who is that person. I see you are upset, Rena. I know it's so hard when your mommy leaves. Emotion coaching prior to distraction. What if we went and made a picture for mommy? What if we go play? What would you like to do while you miss mommy? Because you can do all these things in your class while you miss mommy. We can do both at the same time. And that is my overall message to children and parents and teachers. Missing a parent does not have to mean I don't participate, I don't eat, I scream and carry on, I only walk around with my stuffed animal and I don't participate and I won't respond to any other adults. No, we want to help you. We get that this is hard. I had a child in my son's class who was crying all the time, and one morning I knew this child, so she was crying and crying and crying, and I looked at her and I said, "It's okay. You miss your mommy so much. You can miss her all day." And she stopped dead in her tracks looking at me, and she had this like funny look with her nose, like, "What? Huh? Like someone is telling me I should miss my mother?" Everyone up until then was saying, "Let's go play. Let's go play. Come on. Mommy's coming back. Let's go play." When I said that to her, something clicked. And I said to her, "You know what? You can play while you miss mommy. You can do it. Try it. Practice. You'll see. And the teacher is going to help you." And then it was very cute. My son came over and gave him the book, our book, Yippee Yahoo. He brought it with him every day to school. And he went to his backpack and he took it out and he said, "Here, read this." Because he started to learn that this is what you can do. Reassure parents, it's okay. Your child will be okay. Top 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes if they didn't have a good night's sleep. In a couple minutes, they're going to be fine. A lot of times we see social crying. One child starts crying and everybody else kind of carries on even though they didn't come in carrying on. Reassure parents that that's normal. I had a classroom over the summer where that happened, and I was in the classroom helping support the students and the teachers, and it was really loud, and there were, I would say, 3/4 of the students were screaming and crying, and as each student came in, it got worse. And so one of the teachers said, "I see a mom's face peeping in through the window." So I went outside and I said to the parents, "I know it sounds awful. I'm going to tell you that inside the classroom it sounds worse. So I have news for you. Go. Leave. Don't stay here because it is too hard to listen to. I understand that, but I'm telling you that we've got this. We are here to help your children, and it's going to stop and it's going to dissipate. And why should you stand here listening until it does? It's not good for the teachers, and it's not good for your children, and it's not good for you. So go enjoy yourselves. Go wherever you are." And they were like, "Okay." And sure enough, within 5 minutes, with a few children who were still hyperventilating after that, but it basically calmed down. Parents, remind and rehearse on the day of. Know your child, know how much you want to do that. You don't want to overdo it. But, "Oh, we're going to see Maura Susan. We're going to see Miss Randy. And she's going to do this and she's going to do that. And we're going to do this many hugs and this many kisses. And then we're going to go. Then we're going to say goodbye. And then you're going to do this. Then you're going to do that. And then I'm going to come back for you." After whatever it is that you know you're coming back. After rest time, after lunchtime, whatever it may be. Always say goodbye. I often have discussions, disagreements with parents about this because a lot of parents feel it's easier just to leave if your child isn't upset. Why make them be upset by leaving? So I will share with you, you're not making your child upset by leaving. Your child, it's organic. Children, when you have attachments and relationships for young children who don't have their frontal lobe developed, they're going to react. It's going to be hard. Saying goodbye might be a trigger, but it's there for them. It's not that you're making it worse. You are being a reasonable human being who says, "Before I leave somewhere, I say goodbye." That's common courtesy. And I don't want you to be more anxious because all of a sudden you turn around and I've disappeared, and then you're more worried as to when I'm coming back. So always say goodbye. Leave, don't linger. As a teacher, I will tell you, and as a parent and as a social worker, this is very important. The longer you stay, the longer children carry on, the longer other children will start carrying on. It does not teach children how we, this is what we have to do. I've had parents who've asked their children, do you want me to stay? If it's not their choice, you should not be giving them a choice at that point. I will tell you, it is not easy to leave. I understand it myself, and I've seen parents struggling as well, and it is so hard. But I assure you, lingering makes it worse. Display confidence, even if you're not so confident, and even if you are so worried, try to muster up all the confidence that you can. Hi, we're at school. I'm leaving you, and this is going to be great. And even though it's hard, we're going to be great. And I know you miss me, and that can feel sad, and you might feel like crying. And if you need to cry, that's okay. But don't cry the whole day, because then you won't be able to have fun. I want to hear about all the things you got to do having fun while you miss me. Do you know what I'm going to do? Well, I'll miss you. I'm going to go to work, and I'm going to do this, that, or the other. I'm going to go to the supermarket. I'm going to go here. And if you're matter of fact, and you're firm, and you're empathic at the same time, and you throw your love in there, that is a very valuable way to say goodbye to your child that will make it doable. Next slide. So now we want to make sure that, you know, sometimes I, you know, we don't want to just work on all of this, try it the first day, and then if it works, forget that we have to keep doing it. Or if it doesn't work, feel like, why did I do all this? It didn't even help. So as we know, our children are not robots, and they are not always predictable, even though they can be very predictable. And in a classroom, you know, especially at the beginning, children are not always so predictable. They're trying to figure out the lay of the land. They're trying to figure out socialization. They're trying to figure out communication. They're trying to figure out how to be okay without their parents. They're trying to figure out how to get the teacher to help them when they need help. There's a lot going on for a little brain, and it is a lot to manage. So we want to remind and rehearse on both ends. And that actually is true for educators, to remind parents and rehearse with parents, what are we going to do? And even it's valuable to do that in front of the child. Remember, tomorrow, this is what we're going to do. So I shared with you earlier, I had a student who the end of school, he would not leave. He went to the back of the classroom and started kicking and screaming and carrying on, and had reverse separation anxiety. And I went over to him. I said to the other teachers, you know, talk to mom. And I had already told mom that I had heard that this had happened. We would see what would happen the first day of school. And I went over to him and I said to him, I see you don't want to leave today. That's emotional, social emotional learning. That's building skills. I see you don't want to leave. You really like being school, I guess. You like being here. I bet you missed mommy during the day, thinking you probably do really want to go home with her. But you know what? We can't throw toys, and we can't kick and hit when that happens. So let's figure out how you're going to leave the classroom today, because that's what you have to do, because we don't sleep here. And we went through this, and I spoke with the mom separately then while the teachers were with the student, and it took about 3 days. And within 3 days, the child was no longer kicking, no longer hitting. He wasn't so excited to leave, but he was much more compliant and willing to do it. And the mom, it was amazing, because what she articulated to us, to myself and my co-teachers, was that this was the first time that she actually didn't feel like a terrible mother. Because all this time, all the other kids were just going home with their parents, and she felt like, my kid hates me. Why does he not want to go? What am I doing wrong? Like, he seems happy. What am I doing? Maybe I shouldn't be sending him to school. Maybe it's too early for him. She was going through all this self-doubt because it didn't go well. And that can happen. When it doesn't go well, we start to doubt ourselves. We start to feel guilty. We think we're not good at this. We blame ourselves. We may blame our child, whatever it may be. But when I shared with the mom that this is normal, maybe this is an unusual way of expressing it, but it's still within normal and reason. And we need to give him the sense that we understand that this is difficult and why it may be difficult, and give him suggestions on what he can do to manage it, because he has to manage it. And then we were very clever. One of my teachers suggested, why don't we let him be dismissed first? Let's make sure mom is there and we see her first, send him out of the classroom first, because then he doesn't have to sit there and be anxious while everyone's going, or sit there and stewing, what should I do so I don't have to leave, because I'm not ready to leave. And it really worked very well. And after a couple of weeks, he was running to his mom at the end of the day. So we need to remind, we need to rehearse, we need to try to be as consistent as we can. As a teacher, I will tell you that I thank parents who trust us and are sure that we are doing what is best for their child, because that makes my classroom an environment that is so much easier to teach in. Because I am making sure that the parents and I are on the same page prior to the child coming, so we're all clear. We don't have to, no one has to feel confused. No one has to wonder what on earth is going to happen and what on earth am I going to do when it happens? What if we're not ready? What if we're busy with another child? All of that is figured out. And yes, you have to be flexible, as you see, because sometimes it doesn't always work out that way where everything goes according to plan. But if you've talked about it, then you already will have another plan in mind. And as an educator, I will tell you that it is a phenomenal opportunity to build a relationship with your students. And you can teach them more social emotional skills when they trust you and they see that you are there to help them and that you get what the difficulties are of separating and that you're not going to just dismiss it and say, mommy's coming back, let's go play. You're going to be able to say, I get this is hard when mommy leaves. I don't like it when mommies leave either. It's so hard. What can we do about that? Because we're here at school and this is where you are. That is a very different message to send to a child. And again, transferring over the relationship piece is critical and allowing it to be fluid and flexible so that when the child finishes school, they're back to have their relationship with their parent. That's really important. You know, I'm sure all preschool classrooms have family pictures. That's a really important ongoing tool to have, that if a child is expressing distress, you will show them the picture of the family if that helps. And remember that you are fostering resiliency. You are fostering the building of social emotional skills, and that is huge. And you are also sending a message that this is something we can manage and manage well. And for parents, we're teaching life skills. So we're going to move to the next slide, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about how we're going to do that in a little more detail. So I've alluded to some of these things, but I want to just focus a drop more on them because our body language matters a lot. Along with our communication, how we are bringing our child into school. If they feel us being tense and anxious, they're going to pick up on that. And any study that you will read and all the research, it all says that if a parent manages separation drop-off well, the child will do better, even if they cry. They will manage in a shorter period of time and get functioning in the classroom more quickly when a parent, so that's when your body language and your communication is all really wrapped together and in sync. You can be silly, fun. It can be fun for separation and being silly. So that's actually how I got the title of my book, Yippee Yahoo. One morning after a few really very difficult mornings, we were listening to a CD in the car, Raffi. He's a children's singer, and the song is We're Going to the Zoo, 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 How About You, You, You. So I always like to sing. That's sort of one of my ways of trying to manage preschool kind of things. I make up songs randomly for all kinds of things. So I started singing, we're going to school, 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 yippee, yahoo, hoo, hoo, we're going to see your teachers and your friends, choo, choo, choo. And I started making up all kinds of silly names of the kids and the teachers. And my son, who was a little bit over two, looked at me and said, those not the names. And I said, oh, who are the names? So the whole way to school, we were laughing and having a good time. And as we walked into school, I was trying my best to keep that song going and that silliness going. And when we got there, even though he was anxious, at that point, I had already spoken to the teacher, so they already knew what the plan was. He had already known. We had gone to school. I felt confident this time. That morning, I will never forget the difference it was for me walking into that room. And I will tell you, as a teacher, I have seen when parents have felt empowered, they come in, their body language and their communication communicates that. And they are modeling all of that. And even if the child shows some distress, it's for a very short period of time. And the communication that I can have with the student after that is reflecting what the mother has said, then we're all on the same page and we're sharing the same message. We're not sharing a message that you don't want to read when you're not with your mom. You don't want to participate. You'll sit on the side and you'll hold on to your lovey the whole day. Now, some children need to hold on to their lovey for a period of time, and then we can usually get it off to the side. It's not ideal because they can't really participate, but that may be what they need as they're trying to work on getting to school and managing it well. You know, we can say to our children, we can still have a good day even when we're away from each other. The more we talk it out and work it out in advance with our children, the less likely they're going to need to behave it out for a lengthy period of time. And as a teacher, I will tell you that's very helpful, because then I can start getting to the lesson plans and all the wonderful academic pieces that we want to try to accomplish when the class is functioning very well. I want to speak for a second of the how can I leave if my child is screaming, but what if my child won't let me leave? That's one of my favorites. If any of you have said that, I said that in the beginning, I admit it. And now I think to myself, what on earth was I thinking? That is not my child's choice, and he's not in charge of whether I leave or not. So that is something that we need to remember very carefully, and we want to model and role model deep breathing. There are a lot of different strategies when your child is having a tantrum, and that as a teacher is something that I work on with my students. I have the Keep Calm Kit that I created that I use in my classroom. That's a very effective tool because it's building skills to calm down. It's not purely just distraction, it's really skill building, and that is what we're looking for. We want children to be able to calm down after a meltdown, and that's something you can work on as a parent. So we're going to go to the next slide. And this is one of my favorite quotes by Chaim Ginot. He is a world-renowned teacher, psychologist, psychotherapist, parent educator who is died in 1973. And he pioneered techniques for communicating with children that are still taught today, a lot of social, emotional things, emotional intelligence. And he's spot on. As you see from what I've been sharing, children are like wet cement. Whatever falls on them makes an impression. And that is so true when it comes to separation anxiety. How we behave, the teachers and parents, makes a big difference in how children manage. It does not mean that children will never cry and will never express distress when they're separating. It will mean that we will all be working together to make an impression on them that this is part of life, and we will get through it and get through it as well as we possibly can, and will improve as time goes on. And that is very critical. So next slide. So just again, as you've seen, we're not going to talk specifically about each one in detail, but what we're going to see is that we are building critical life skills through separation, and that it is why it is not to be looked at as something that is just a phase and we'll suffer through it and it's going to be miserable, but that's just life and we'll just distract them and they'll stop crying and they'll be fine. We have an opportunity as parents and educators to build self-awareness, self-co-regulation, social awareness, relationship building. So how do we do that? Self-awareness, ability to correctly recognize your own emotions over time. I feel sad. I feel worried when we say goodbye. That's great to be able to do that. I am not going to scream and cry uncontrollably because I can co-regulate. I have someone there who's giving me solutions, skills, opportunities of things I can do instead of crying. I have social awareness. I get that when you go to school, you get there, you wash your hands, you say goodbye to your mom and dad, and it's hard, but you get going and you have a good time in school and you do all these great things. And I see not even if another kid is crying, I don't need to cry because I'm okay. I know I'm safe. Relationship building. My teachers can help me. My mommy trusts my teachers. I can be a responsible decision-making person. I won't hit or kick because I'm mad or sad. I can be independent and I can manage on my own without help. Those are huge and enormous lessons and benefits. And we're going to end off with real quick, next slide. So another quote of mine that I really love, not mine, but one of my favorites, Brené Brown, who is a social worker and an expert in vulnerability. She speaks about you can't get to courage without walking through vulnerability, and that's what we've been talking about tonight. vulnerability is separation. When we are separating from people, we are vulnerable. We feel mixed emotions. It is very difficult. But when we get through it and we work through it, then we are able to build courage and resiliency. And that is an enormous skill and benefit of having a healthy, supportive separation. Next slide, we're just going to take a quick look just to see what we've recapped, that we have a lot of tools that we can use prior to separating, the day of, and ongoing. And
you know what, Randy, I'm
them,
just going to,
yes,
not interrupt you, I'm just going to say, while Randy is winding down now on the recap and resources, if anyone has any questions,
yes, please,
please put them in the chat box, and then when Randy is done, we'll come back to them.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Sarah. So we're going to go to the next slide because I want you to leave on a positive note. Hooray for the yippee-yahoos. Look at all these successful children who are saying goodbye to their family members. And it may not be the first day of school, but it's down the road. And this is how we can absolutely see and look at separation. It can be fun, it can be exciting, and it can be full of growth and development. And now we're going to just take a real quick look at the resources. So I noted a number of books. They talk about parenting things, social emotional learning, not specifically only about separation anxiety, but they all have aspects of that. There are a number of websites, including my own Zach and Nat at the top. Music Together, this song is a great song if you have a chance to go listen to. It's a wonderful song that reflects this overall approach that I'm talking about of what the different, how separation anxiety can sometimes happen. And it's a really excellent song to listen to get you in the right mode. And the next slide, I listed a number of books. Most of them don't have anything to do with separation anxiety. I've actually just recently found a number of other books that are doing a fairly good job at that. One of them is from the Best Behavior series. There's a book called Bye Bye Time, which does a really nice job at helping with separation. The other books are a little bit more feeling oriented because I think that's an important piece. And if you would like, you can email me. I do have a list of books, and I do have a growing list of books that I think are really helpful for separation.
Actually, you know what, Randy? I'd like to do a follow-up email. Maybe I'll get that list from you, and then when
perfect.
I follow up with everybody, I'll send it out.
That would be great. Okay, and now we're going to just, I think we're going to our next slide. And I want to leave you with this wonderful quote by the founder of the Montessori movement. Our task is to help children communicate with the world using all their potential, strengths, and languages, and to overcome any obstacle presented by our culture. And that, I think, is the overall message of what separation can be. And I thank you all for listening. I am really excited for all of you. Hopefully, you will be empowered to rock separation, and I am happy to answer questions at this point.
Thank you so much, Randy. That was so amazing. I feel like we can all make like a list of strategies now and like map a plan out. And there's still a few days, so we have time.
Yes,
I mean,
we have time. And even if you have 2 or 3 days, you can still accomplish a lot.
That's great. Karen asked, you mentioned your Keep Calm kit. Can you just speak to that for a minute?
Sure. It's a box that has a number of items in it that I've kind of used over time that have a focus on building skills for co-regulating. It's designed for adults and children to use together in the beginning, and then after that for children to use it independently. And it's a really effective tool in a preschool classroom. It's effective at home also. And it comes with cards that explain each of the items. And there's a side for children, a side for parents, and really talking about process-driven and being proactive and managing things in a healthy way so that we can really learn to self-regulate ultimately.
Okay, great. And if they Google you on your website, they can
locate that? Absolutely.
Okay. And then Adita had a question about a 5-year-old who's having a challenging time getting used to the school setting. He's afraid of opening up and being part of the class, whether it's kind of separation anxiety or social anxiety, anything you would recommend that you haven't already articulated?
Well, I guess, I mean, I would reiterate that there should be a conversation with the teachers and parents together to strategize. I think easing the child into a little bit at a time and sort of having the child, I had a child who didn't want to participate in anything at all, and we just tried to move the child a little bit closer to where the action was a little bit at a time. We try to have them do the same thing that the class might be doing, but maybe off to the side, but with sharing that ultimately we want you to join us because you're an important part of the classroom. And I would say if that continues on lingering for quite a long time, then it might be worth looking into other intervention with other professionals to see if there's anything else going on outside of just regular, transitioning into a different environment.
Okay, I think the last question we'll take is from Kira, who said that her kids will have like sporadic meltdowns all the way through second grade, this kind of on and off experience.
Right.
Do you want to speak to that?
So separation anxiety can actually show up in elementary school, and it's actually reasonable and fine if that does, because children are responding to having attachments, and maybe different situations are going to act like a trigger. And so that's why I always say to parents, even if things are going super well, don't just rest your laurels and say we're all good, because it can change. So it's looking to see if there are triggers that might be pushing those kind of behaviors to happen in those specific situations, and really talking to the children about skills, about what can we do when it's hard, when we're not together, because not being together is part of life. And we're going to figure out how to do this. And you can use yourself as a parent almost saying, there's sometimes I might tear up when I start to think about you because I miss you, but then I take a deep breath and I count to three and I say, they're safe, they're okay, I'm going to hear all about their day soon. I can do this. You want to kind of model and almost show them what are some things that they can try to do. And that would be just like a quick answer for that.
Right. Thank you so much. It made me remember that one of my kids, every Monday morning was trouble.
Yeah.
Tuesday, fine. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, fine. That Monday morning, and I remember saying to the teacher, she's going to be off a little bit Monday morning, but she'll recover within an hour or so. And my daughter knew she would recover too. It was going to be hard, but she was going to recover. And that was even when she was like 6 or 7, after vacation.
So absolutely. So Monday morning blues after vacation, we'll see a lot of these kind of things happening again. So keep, you know, a list of all these skills and these ideas and the tools and really start implementing them before a vacation, over the weekend, on you know, a day or two before going back to school. Start doing some of the things we talked about that you do before the first day of school, and that will help ease the process and the transition back into school.